This podcast delves into the dark, the depraved, and all things to keep you up at night. Listener discretion is advised. Now, sit back, pull the covers over your head, and allow yourself to be taken on a journey through the abyss.
Hey there, pod people. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Through the Abyss podcast. I'm your co-host, Mandy.
And I'm Ben.
And today we are discussing Gary Ray Bowles. He is a serial killer from the mid-90s that probably not a lot of people have heard about, because he wasn't one of these who apparently did a lot of interviews or made a big fuss while he was in jail on death row, which is why I only have one little audio clip that I'll play a little bit later. So we're pretty much just going to talk about who he was, what he did, you know, maybe see if we can psychoanalyze this guy a little bit and figure out what was going on in his head. So jumping right in, he was born on January 25th, 1962 in Clifton Forge, Virginia. His parents were William Franklin Bowles and Frances Carol Price Bowles. Now, his dad actually died about 6 months before he was born, so he never got a chance to meet or get to know his dad. I don't know if that had any kind of effect on him, probably a little bit, maybe. Now, his mom, she remarried several times after the death of his father. And according to her, because she testified in court that Gary had a decent early childhood. There wasn't any real problems, but at the age of around 7 or 8, his first stepfather began to abuse him, and not sexually, but like beating him with either a belt or his fist or something like that. And
yeah, I want to throw out there, sorry, not to cut you off. Just like, okay. I kind of chuckled. I want people to know I'm not heartless. It's just that. so like number one, right? Like, one of the things he said was like, she's been married several times, right? Whenever you have to say several instead of a number, it's a lot. Right. number two, she's like, he had this relatively good upbringing, but it's like, we know that already he's got several primary caregivers going in and out of his life, right? Which for a small child is a problem that leads to attachment issues. And then the first one that we're really going to mention, like, he's beating on him. So I don't know what his mom's looking at, but not seeing a lot of.
Would like multiple marriages in the first, you know, I don't know, 10 to 12 years of a person's life lead to like dissociation type disorders?
I mean, it could lead to all kinds of disorders, and it's not even the marriages, right? Like, I have the Christian background, right? So yes, I am pro marriage. I mean, actually, I'm a bad Christian. I'm pro do what you want. Let's be honest. Let's be real, Mandy. You know me.
Okay,
I'm pro
do
what you want.
I wasn't gonna say anything.
As long as you're not hurting anybody, right? But to me, it's like, it doesn't even matter if they're married. If this mom had like a friend who was any gender that was there for years and didn't go anywhere, that's good for a child. Right.
Right.
But the fact that these people are in and out of this person's life is giving them no stability for caregivers. Right. And at a young age, like, that's very, very devastating to a child, because what you need when you're a child more than anything is your primary caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, however many there are, to be stable. Right. So the fact that they're coming, this child getting attached to them, and then they disappear is teaching this child that people you love go away.
That's true. That's a good point. Or beat you senselessly for no reason.
Yes.
So,
which at that point, you'd be better off if they went away. But as a child, you don't get that, right?
Oh, so yeah,
You learn to love people that hurt you.
Yeah, I think, given his crimes, I think he was just, I don't know, we'll get into a little bit later after we go through a little bit of this, but it's an interesting case in terms of psychological aspects. But the first stepdad, when his mom would try to intervene and protect him, she, you know, got beat too. So she ended up divorcing the first guy and remarried a guy named Chet. Now, if your name's Chet, I'm sorry, but that just I picture the Chet from like Weird Science.
I was doing the same thing, and I was about to say the same thing, and I'm glad you're going there because now I don't have to be the bad guy. Go ahead, continue.
Yeah, I'm going to be the bad guy. I'm sorry. If you're named Chet, I picture you as this, you know, military redneck asshole who probably not very intelligent.
Yes. If you haven't seen Weird Science, see it. You're talking like the high fade. I get kind of a high fade, so I'm not trying to knock, but well, real that was short
military
on top.
Style.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the military cut.
Exactly.
But if your name is Chet and you're a nice guy, I apologize.
Yes. If you're Chet and you're a nice guy, we apologize. However, to quote Weird Science, Chet's an asshole.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to watch that movie later now. So Chet, the one we're speaking of as far as Gary Ray Bowles is concerned with, he was known to fly into violent alcohol-induced rages and beat Gary, his brother, and his mom. Gary was hospitalized.
Can I have one thing real quick?
Yeah.
So, like, we obviously, you can't go back generation after generation after generation. I mean, yes, you could, but to a point, you know, it gets counterproductive. But we also don't know what kind of issues his mom had growing up. But I mean, it's very clear. Doesn't even
well. She's got a pattern.
She's got a pattern of picking really bad men, right?
Yeah.
Which could be any sort of disorder. Like a lot of the personality disorders, people choose really tumultuous relationships. But she's going from this guy that she left because he beats her to a violent, raging alcoholic.
Yeah.
So it's like, let me leave this guy for being bad, and then I'm going to get someone who's pretty worse. Much just as bad or worse. Yes.
Honestly, I think if I had to guess, I'd say that her daddy probably had some violence issues when she was growing up.
I mean, it's a fair bet.
So this Chet guy liked to beat his mom, put her in the hospital. He was really violent with Gary and his brother. Around age 10, Gary started to sniff glue and paint and, you know, kind of experiment with other drugs just to, I guess, get his mind away from the atrocities he's having to live with on a daily basis, which I can understand, but 10 years old, I mean, my God, that's, I don't even know if I'm sure I knew what drugs were, but like sniffing glue and paint, I don't know if I would have even known about that at age 10. I can't really remember, but he actually eventually dropped out of school during eighth grade. So, I mean, he doesn't even have like a full middle school education. And the violence, of course, continue because it's not anything that's going to change. Chet certainly is not going to change. So Gary gets fed up with it because his mom won't leave him. He dropped out of the eighth grade and the violence continued. And, you know, Gary and his brother had gotten to the point where I guess they had just had enough. So Gary was about 13 or 14 and all the shit that they've been going through built up enough to the point where they ganged up on him and severely beat him. And there was one point when one of the boys hit him on top of the head with a rock. And if I had to guess, it doesn't say who it was, but if I had to guess, it was Gary, because this is something that was common with one of his other murders that he did. His mom, you know, given all the violence and everything, still would not leave this Chet dude. So he left home, prostituted himself to men. You know, I guess he made enough money to eat and things like that, but not enough to maintain any type of a residence. So he was pretty much homeless throughout his teenage years and a lot of his adulthood. As far as the gay thing, he wasn't considered to be gay. He did like women, but, you know, he beat the shit out of his women relationship. So it's, I don't know if he's reliving what his stepdaddies did to him and his brother and his mom, and just that's something that has been ingrained in him, or if he's dealing with some kind of, you know, if he is gay, doesn't want to admit it and trying to fight it, that type of thing, and just, you know, just rages out. I mean,
yeah, I would see it kind of like, I'm going to use Michael Myers, right?
Okay.
The world really wants to believe that people that do bad things are just evil because it's easier to understand and it's easier to emotionally process. However, this guy is going to end up doing bad things and he kind of had an upbringing and sort of like the perfect storm type of situation where mm-hmm. you kind of need empathy, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that everyone that's hurt growing up and anyone that has a bad upbringing is going to end up being like this. Right. But if you take someone's like biological factors plus their environmental factors plus any life factors, right? Like mm-hmm. we're doing personality disorders right now. And one thing's called V codes. Like just the fact that this guy's homeless, that's a V code, right? That's a life factor that leads to stress and anxiety. And, sure. you know, so he's got this like perfect storm of things and you don't know what combination of humanity in a person is going to lead to these things. So it's like, it's really hard to take like a violent murder and be like, but right. But like, I feel like we need to an extent be like, but right. Cause like this guy's been through a terrible amount of things. Right. So he's not just this crazy violent dude. He's grown up. Well, he is, but he's grown up in this crazy violent scenario.
Right.
So he's mimicking what he sees. But as far as what you were talking about, this all started with a purpose, I promise. As far as what you were talking about whether or not he's gay, like I can't really speculate on that, but I would say just from a guy standpoint, mm-hmm. like I've never prostituted myself, but women aren't going to pay me either, right? This guy's homeless, right? He needs money. He needs to live. That's the only really chance he has of getting money in that realm, I would think.
Well, yeah, men are definitely more apt to pay for sex than women are.
Yeah, and whether or not that led to him enjoying it, you know, who knows?
Well, that's true. That's true. One of Gary's relationships was really intensely bad. June 1982, He brutally attacked this woman he was dating and living with. He sexually assaulted her. He beat her. She had like fingerprint like bruising around her neck, you know, as a result of him choking her, which is another pattern of his. One of her breasts was also bitten. Her face was severely battered, so much to the point that her eyes were swollen shut. She also had some internal lacerations to her vagina and rectum. And when the FBI, I'm not sure why they were called in at this point, unless there was, you know, they were investigating some other things, but I know what it was. The FBI was actually during a later interview because he was once on their 10 most wanted people's list. So once they caught him is like, I guess when they're during an investigation, the crime scene, they talked about how the bedroom and the bathroom of this lady's apartment had a significant quantity of blood. And according to her statement in court, cause she did appear in his trial, the blood splatters on the walls reached as high as 5 feet above the bed. I mean, that is some intensive, hard hitting. I mean, you have to be beating the shit out of somebody to have blood splatter like that.
I feel like to be talking about blood splatters 5 feet above the ceiling or 5 feet above the floor or whatever the exact phrasing was. Like you would normally be talking about the crime scene of somebody else that was murdered. So like, she's very lucky. She's good.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Of course he went to jail for this and he was sentenced to 6 years. I think he only did about two though. He was incarcerated multiple times and for whatever reason, he must be like the epitome of the perfect prisoner. He never served full, you know, any of his terms. Well, with the exception of the last time he was convicted of murder, he was executed.
And can I take a stab at the travesty of our justice system? Yes,
you may. Yes,
right. So the problem is we just throw people in prison, right? Like mm-hmm. this guy, he does this violent crime, he gets thrown in prison. This crime was so violent and so bizarre. Like he's biting breasts, he's got strangling her. Was it a knife that he used to get the blood splatter? Like what did he
I think he was just beating her.
Just from beating her. He's got blood splatter 5 feet. I mean, I know that it's not perfect and can't solve everything, but like this guy should have been in intensive therapy, right? This should have been 6 years of therapy. This should have been 6 years of making him able to be okay when he left. But we just throw people in there and then he doesn't talk to anyone because he's probably a little too smart to fall for your bullshit, right? So he's going to stay to himself, be a model prisoner. He's going to get out early, and he's going to be the same dude. That's a problem.
Well, I mean, you have perfect model prisoner behavior. You know, prisons are overcrowded. Yeah, they're going to let you out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but there's different types of prisoners, right? Like, there's, I'm not trying to throw rocks at anyone either, but there's prisoners that, like, they're on the street being violent towards each other. They go into prison, and they continue, like, that violent activity towards each other, right? Someone like him, who is going to fall more in the, like, personality disorders realm, he's a chameleon. He's going to go in there and give you what he wants until he's back out on the street doing what he wants. People should be smarter than that, and they should know that, right? But I don't even know if it's smarter than that or that they don't know that. It's that we don't want to invest the money to actually help these people.
Yeah.
But then we put these weapons back on the street. If you do nothing to a guy like this and then put him back on the street, he's a weapon.
Well, I think he's just this big pit of rage, just it waiting for somebody to come along and just do that one little trigger, and then he's off.
Right. But in prison, not a whole lot of chance that that's going to be triggered, because that's not the environment that triggers him. It's the sexual interpersonal relationships that are going to trigger him.
Right. Right. And, you know, I always wonder, you know, you think these people who can beat somebody to death and things like that, well, they must have some kind of sociopathy or psychopathy, but I don't know about him. I mean, I think, I don't want to call it a crime of passion, but I mean, I think it was a fuel. Well, like Eileen Wuornos, I think a lot of his things were just rage fueled, and somebody set him off, and that was that.
Yeah, but the rage fueled violence, especially in interpersonal relationships, that screams borderline personality disorder, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and the number one factor that leads to borderline personality disorder is childhood trauma. And we know he's had that, right? So, yeah. He needed help, but it's too late now.
But I mean, just to clarify, somebody who has borderline personality disorder or antisocial disorder does not necessarily mean they have any type of sociopathy or psychopathy, correct?
It doesn't mean that they're going to be criminals.
Okay.
Right. It doesn't mean that they're going to have, it doesn't mean that they can't live productive lifestyles. It doesn't mean they can't have regular relationships. But in this guy's case, given the fact of that violent crime, right?
Mm-hmm.
It means they probably should have done some counseling with him, right? He should have been, I don't know, maybe they did. Maybe he was so bad off that it just didn't work, right? I mean, maybe, right?
Well, the bad thing about this is because some of the incarcerations, if he would actually have been forced to serve his full term, some of these murders wouldn't have happened because he would have been in jail at the time. And that's what is really kind of distressing about.
Yeah.
Our justice system.
Yeah. To further hit the question you asked earlier, though, like personality disorders, every single human being that exists has certain criteria for certain personality disorders. Personality disorders can actually eventually, as you age and grow and learn and take care of yourself, if you choose that path, get to a level of not being clinical anymore, not being diagnosable anymore. You can actually start to reverse the issues from them. So it's not like you're doomed for life. But this guy had so much going on and no one took care of him, and he definitely wasn't taking care of himself, that it was just like there was no healing or growing or changing in the right direction that was going to occur.
Right. Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, all of us can be narcissistic.
Oh, right? Sure. Yeah.
All of us can have points where we don't have empathy. All of us can have points where we have outbursts, right? Where it's like something triggers you and you're like, man, I don't even know where that came from. It's just that we're not doing what these things, right?
We don't fully let loose.
Yes.
I could probably beat somebody to death, but I don't, or I haven't yet, knock on wood. Hope it doesn't happen. But right.
That statement alone has the FBI watching you now. I see them. They're behind you.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, the FBI have way more pressing people to worry about than little old me. So he does his little 2-year stint in prison. And when he's released, he got another conviction. He was convicted in the summer of 91 for unarmed robbery in Volusia County, which is in Florida, He pushed a woman down and stole her purse and fled. I just said fleed. Forget I just said that.
Fleed is actually a totally different thing. That's where like somebody is trying to talk to you about how great like some bass player is. And then you're like, but what about Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers?
No, they you did not just try to rip roll with Flea.
They just got fleed, bro.
Oh God, I'm gonna forget you just said that. again, he didn't do his whole prison sentence. And this kind of led up to his murders. Now, I'm going to start with Walter Hinton, and he was actually, they called him Jay. This was the last of his murders, but it was kind of the one he was convicted for and most known for. This is in November of 94. His sister was celebrating her birthday with her fiance, and Jay and his sister were close, you know, so he was expected to be there. He never showed up. Didn't show up for work for a couple days. And of course, his sister and her fiance got worried. So they went over to where Jay lived and ended up finding him dead in his home. You know, he had been dead for a few days. So the police, when they were going back and going over the crime scene and everything, they discovered that his wallet, along with personal papers, were strewn on the bed. There was a pile of sheets and a large stepping stone covered in blood. So we go back to the time when he hit his stepdad with a rock, which is where I think that may have come from. But the stone was actually like 40 pounds. So I can't even imagine the damage that somebody in a rage could do with a 40-pound stone to somebody's head. I mean, the guy, it had to completely crush his head. Of course, there was a large concentration of blood splattered on the bathroom floor, which is where the body was actually discovered. Supposedly, there were liquor and beer bottles and everything strewn around. So when they had caught Gary and talked to him about that, they had earlier been getting high and, you know, drinking and, you know, just, I guess having a good old boys day or whatever. Now, Jay had actually allowed Gary to stay with him because he had helped him move at one point. And of course, Gary didn't have a place to stay, so they stayed together. I'm not 100% sure if they were an item. I think they may have possibly been, because I believe Jay was out as a gay man, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yeah, so we don't really know how they met, right?
Well, now Gary picked up most of his place. Well, he picked up most of the people that he, well, his victims, like in a gay bar or something along those lines. So, his victims were gay.
So this guy, like you said, you're not sure if they were like an item or whatever, but like, oh, you mean like boyfriends? Like,
yeah, actual couple.
But he probably did meet him through the same means he met everyone else.
Yeah, yeah, because. Okay. I mean, this is what this guy is kind of, I think they also called him the anti-gay slayer and I-95 killer. Cause that's
okay. So this is his MO. He's picking up these guys.
He's getting these guys in gay bars and in places of the like. Back to the 40-pound rock and what we were talking about, how, I mean, he must've had some crazy injuries. He actually, obviously, the fractures were severe, but that's not what killed him. Jay's cause of death was strangulation. And Gary, for whatever reason.
So he's back to strangling people. His girlfriend that he put in the hospital.
He tried to strangle her, yeah. And after, of course, he beat her. Then he tried to strangle. Same with this guy. You know, he took a rock and bashed his head, and now he's trying to strangle him. But he also shoved toilet paper and a rag down into Jay's throat. We're just hoping
to suffocate him or kill him.
I don't know. I mean, it seems like overkill. Like, he bashed him with a rock, he's strangling him, he's stuffing toilet paper and a rag down his throat. Now they think that Jay was probably unconscious at the time that his mouth was stuffed with material, which for his sake I would hope so, because that just, I mean, strangulation alone has to be horrible, but having somebody shove shit down your throat is, I can't even imagine. But it didn't take long for them to come across Gary as a suspect in the murder of Jay. And this is going off of several eyewitnesses, which, you know, you can take that for what it is. But that included neighbors and friends of Jay.
Do we know how long it is this murder? This is his last murder anyways, right?
Yeah, it was like it was like from March 94 to this one, which is November of 94. So like, what, 8 months? Something like that.
Right. My real question though is like, do we know like about how many years, like roughly, from the beating of his girlfriend to the first murder?
That was 91. No, the unarmed robber is 91. So,
and Gary's the last 82. Murder at 94.
So 82 is when he was in prison for beating his girlfriend.
Okay.
And then so March of 94
years.
Is
and then when we have really we don't know really what's been going on for those years.
Well, you know, he was incarcerated, you know, a lot of the time for burglary and grand theft auto, that type of thing. Of course, his girlfriend was a sexual battery and assault. But I don't know what happened, you know, when 94 hit, when he just decided to, you know.
Right. Yeah. The only reason I'm asking there was a reason for it is I'm just wondering if it was. You said they quickly picked him up as a person, right? Obviously he lives with the guy, so that's a good reason to look at him. They're going to look at their close relationships first, but also, you know, he's obviously going to have a file about the girlfriend incident. So if it had been like a year later, they'd be like, all right, that's probably where they like how they found him. But it had been so long at that point for this, that although that file probably was eventually found, right? Clearly, it probably wasn't a major factor in apprehending him. So I was just kind of thinking about that.
At this point, he was already on the FBI's 10 most wanted list.
Oh, okay.
So when they caught him, like eyewitness sketches created this picture of this guy named Timothy Whitfield, which was one of his aliases. Yeah.
So he's definitely in databases at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. If he's on the most wanted list, that's pretty intense. It said it took 2 days for the authorities to find Gary. And on October 22nd, 94, the police apprehended and arrested him at the labor pool at Jacksonville Beach. They interrogated him. And he, at this time, he was going by Timothy Whitfield. They later realized his name was Gary Ray Bowles. And I mean, they said they intensely grilled him and he finally admitted to killing Jay. And of course, like I said, Jay wasn't his only victim. He was on the most wanted list in connection with a series of other brutal slayings. And they called him the I-95 killer because his murderous trail stretched along Interstate 95 from Maryland to Florida. So it wasn't just in Florida, but Jay was killed in Florida. So of course, Florida dug their claws in and got him. But he confessed to five other murders. And the thing with Jay is they had only lived together for about 2 weeks. He was asked to leave after a dispute concerning his behavior towards one of Jay's female friends happened.
So that's perhaps where the rage incident occurred.
Yeah, I think that's the trigger because that wasn't the only time that happened. It happened with some of his other people.
Yeah,
that he killed. So I think,
yeah, because when you were going over the crime, like in my head, I'm like, I get it. Like, he's not normal. He's not like, so it's hard for us to like be like, oh, but it's like such an amount of rage. You're hitting him with this rock. You're stuffing this shit down his throat. Like you said, it's excessive. Like, what could this dude have done to piss you off so bad? And that's exactly it there. He threatened his livelihood, right? So even though, like, in reality, I mean, this guy's already on the most wanted list, so he's probably not too concerned with doing things in the right process. But most people would be like, look, if I kill this guy, someone's going to figure it out. This could actually make things worse. But to him, he's like, if I can get rid of him, then I still have a place to live. Right?
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, he's got his livelihood threatened. So that's where I would say that's the trigger for sure.
So the FBI had their man that they are, you know, they got him to confess to a lovely killing spree that lasted about 8 months. Some of his other victims, let's see, on April 14th, 1994, this is in Daytona, They arrived at the residence of 59-year-old John Hardy Roberts, who had been brutally murdered. He was badly beaten. His body was discovered on the living room floor. He'd been strangled, and a rag was found stuffed into his mouth. So There we go. His head also showed signs of severe trauma, and one of his fingers was almost severed from his hand. So it's the same thing, the head beatings and strangulation. Now I don't know where the shoving of shit into somebody's mouth comes into play, because I don't recall any of that ever happening to him as he was growing up, but I guess that's just part of his MO.
Not to be Freudian, but to me, it's just like this guy's over and over and over again reliving the incident with the stepdad. You know,
it would appear so. Yeah. I mean, that's, and then just kind of taking it one step further. Maybe it's something that he wished he would have, done to his stepdad. Same thing that seems to appear, the disarray of the room that looked like a violent struggle had taken place. Blood, of course, was splattered everywhere. The coffee table and a glass lamp was shattered. The victim's car and wallet with cash and credit cards were missing. So, he killed and also robbed. Thievery was kind of one of his big things anyway.
Just symbolically, my mind flashes back to things. And this is me really reaching out there and speculating, so don't hold me to this. But even if the person's dead at the time, even if the person's almost dead, symbolically stuffing things down their mouth could be a shut the hell up, I'm tired of hearing you type of thing, right? A gag.
Well, and that could have been, if his stepdad was violent physically, he's probably violent. Right? Yeah.
Verbally abusive. Yeah. Verbally as well. That's why I was thinking it. It's because when you said that maybe he wants to do something that he wanted to do to his stepdad, I think that's right on point. And I think that it's he's shutting these people up. Like I said, even if they're dead, it doesn't make sense when you rationally think about it, but it does to someone that's got this kind of issue.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, that same day, April 14th, 1994, a maintenance man discovered the decomposing remains of 38-year-old David Jarman in the basement of his Silver Spring home. Like the other one, Jarman had been badly beaten before having his mouth stuffed with a rag and been strangled to death. And, of course, his car and his wallet were missing. So that's number two, found on the same day. It wasn't done on the same day. They just happened to be found on the same day, which is kind of weird, but, it is what it is. The decomposing remains of 72-year-old Milton Bradley were discovered May 5th behind a shed at a golf club. Huh?
Milton Bradley.
That's what it says, Milton Bradley. I'm sure it's not the same. Game maker? I don't think it's the same guy.
I do want to go back to, and this one's going to get to it too. As much as I was speculating on it, this rag in the throat thing's huge for him.
Yeah.
He does it every.
That's his
every
signature,
single time.
Basically. Yeah. That's his signature. Wow. And he did it to this guy too. Bradley was beaten before being strangled, and he had some type of material stuffed into his mouth. So same MO, same thing. Yeah. And sad
really
thing is
feel
that
like this was a guy that was yelled at a lot.
I don't think with it being a signature move like that, I think there has to be some kind of reason behind it. But then again, he's a serial killer, so who knows? It may just be something, I don't know. Why did BTK like to bind himself in sexual weird positions? Who knows? This Bradley guy, he was actually a World War II veteran and very well liked in his neighborhood and supposed to be a quiet and gentle man, that type of thing. He was very generous, just good guy, sad that somebody like that had, been taken.
Had a lobotomy?
Yeah, it said he had some kind of a lobotomy, but he, because I'm assuming probably to deal with PTSD from World War II, maybe.
Yeah.
And it said it gave him a slight mental impairment.
Yeah.
But
made him more vulnerable prey. It's really sad.
I know, but I can't figure out what might have set him off, because there was no he didn't have any problems with Bradley's female companions or anything like that.
Yeah, who knows?
I can't figure out why he targeted this poor guy. Unless it was
I think we've got a pretty good foundation as to why this person started doing these things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you do have to at some point be like, they also like killing people.
I mean, you would have to, because this is like 2 weeks after the first two.
Yeah. You know? And this guy was just an easy kill, right? So I think some of them were rage and some of them were just like, this one's conveniently easy. I mean, look at Ted Bundy, right? He wasn't mad at all those women. I mean, he had issues that made him mad at women in general.
Yeah.
But some of them were just easy targets. That he was a predator. He looked for easy targets.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess you could look at, well, obviously Gary is a predator, but it's just weird to me to.
I could be wrong. Who knows? This guy might have said one thing, right? This is the type of like. Because I know I've mentioned borderline. I think we're definitely into like you said, antisocial personality disorder, right? He's breaking laws left and right. He doesn't have any concern for social morals and basic human rights, right?
As a means of survival.
Right, as a means of survival for sure. But like, this is somebody that's he's got a combination of things that are making him. How did I get here?
We're trying to figure out why he would kill Milton.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's got a combination, you know, of things that could be triggered by things that aren't. And I'm a hypersensitive person, right? I've had my own issues in life. There are some times where I could be talking to someone and they probably think everything's fine, and then I go quiet, and then like it's like, what's going on? It's like, there's just the one thing, you say, and this is what it was, and I know. But even someone who's docile, like Milton Bradley, though, like he could have said one thing, right? To this guy, it was everything.
That's true. That's true. It's just scary how quickly he goes from quick, like May 19th, same year, body of 37-year-old Albert Morris was discovered in his trailer in Nassau County, Florida. He'd been beaten on the head with some kind of blunt object. This is different though. He was shot in the chest and strangled. But he also had a towel stuffed in his mouth and tied around his head. Car and wallet with credit cards missing. So there's a little bit even more into this one now. Now he was actually shot.
Yeah, now this guy has a gun. So this get worse.
I'm wondering if Albert, even though he was hit in the head, might have possibly gotten really close to overtaking Gary.
Yeah, so you think it's possible he's always had a gun. He just never needed it until now.
It's possible.
I mean, you know what? Of course he had a gun, and I'll tell you why. This guy's doing burglary and shit, right? Like, he's got a weapon.
Yeah, but it's unarmed, though. Like, he was convicted for unarmed.
Oh, wow.
So maybe it was Albert's gun.
I was going to say the exact same thing. I mean, it's just a gun laying around the trailer, and then it gets out of hand, like you said, and there it is. It's convenient. Boom, done.
But there's the same MO again, the strangulation with shit stuffed in his mouth and
hitting him on the head, stuff in the mouth,
stealing after, you know. And he picked up Morris at a gay bar in Jacksonville. He had to be charming because these guys are inviting him to stay with them at their homes, which,
yeah,
I mean, he has to be. When he was younger, he honestly wasn't a bad looking guy. He had some kind of charming capability to get these guys to let him come live with them.
Right.
And it's a shame that they didn't realize they were letting in his house. I mean,
like, devil's advocate here, but we're assuming they're letting him. This guy might just move in. I don't know. He's crazy. Well, he knocks on the door, you open it, and now he lives with you. That's how it works.
I doubt that's the case. Yeah, for, I mean, it's probably not true. People.
He probably is charming, like a Bundy, right? Where he's able
I would say he would have to be. Yeah. Because, I mean, I'm not just going to let any old person, you know, come move into my house.
Right.
I'm not even sure I would let somebody move into my house.
As a possibility is, you had said the one guy, he'd only lived with him 2 weeks, right? So these aren't long-term living environments.
No, it's like a couple weeks.
So he's more like, hey, I need a place to stay for a couple weeks. But you would still have to be charming to do that, because we're not going to let any random person just stay with us for 2 weeks, right? Not happening.
Well, and I'm not even sure that he intended, like, it was a, I don't know if it's like, yeah, you can stay with me for a couple weeks, as opposed to forever, it just took a couple weeks for him to
flip out.
Yeah. Like, to get his triggers. Not long at all.
Yeah.
Now, and again, same month in May of 94, 47-year-old Alverson Carter Jr.'s body was discovered at his Atlanta residence. Same MO, the forensic evidence linked him to the crime. So, like, Gary didn't use gloves or anything like that. And pretty much every crime linked, you know, to Gary. So they pretty much had an airtight case with him.
Yeah.
So yeah, this guy was beaten and strangled and shoved down, rags shoved down his mouth. And
This guy's building such a criminal history. Like, at this point, I don't think like hiding a crime really is like even something like, I mean, not that he seems to care, but it's like, what's the point, right? Like, he's got
such... Okay. So he's confessed. He's got 6 murders under his belt. Jay, of course, was the last one. On December 8th, 94, he was indicted on 2 counts. He was charged for first-degree murder of Jay Hinton and of robbery. He pled guilty solely to the charge of first-degree murder, which seems kind of dumb. You know, you're going to plead guilty to first-degree murder, but I didn't really burglarize that guy. I didn't steal anything.
Right. I mean, what are you going to do? Add to your life sentence?
Right. His trial went really quick. It actually was by a jury, which I don't really understand why there was a jury trial if he pled guilty to the first degree. Like,
I just had the whole trial flash in my mind, and it's ridiculous. But this is what I see: this guy going to the stand. The prosecuting attorney trying to be all savvy. They go up and they're like, "So, tell me, did you have any involvement in the disappearance of blah, blah, blah?" He's like, "Oh, yeah, I killed him." And it's like, "Oh, okay, we're done." Right? Guilty. Well,
he had already confessed to all the murders to the FBI anyway.
I mean, you know? If you confess, like, does a trial doesn't occur usually, right?
Well, unless the jury was specifically just for the sentencing.
Maybe. Because
it says following the presentation of arguments, the jury hearing the case adjourned for a brief period before returning a verdict. The jury found Gary guilty of the first degree murder and robbery of Jay Hinton. They recommended the death sentence by a vote of 10-2, which was agreed to by the court, suggested that Gary be executed by means of the electric chair. Mm. So, I mean, it sounds like he had a trial, but I don't understand if he's pleading guilty why there would have been a trial. That makes no sense to me.
Really much sense at all, right?
Where is Martina when we need her? His public defenders got that appealed though, and it was overturned, the death penalty. And then again, of course, they brought another jury in to go over it again. You know, they affirmed the conviction.
You know what? I think I know why he was charged, why he had a case.
Why?
Because you said that he pled guilty to first degree murder, but he pled innocent to the other stuff. So they have to try him on the other stuff, right?
Well, I guess, yeah. That's just weird. It's just weird.
Unless they just decide to drop it because first degree murder is enough, but it seems like they probably tried him on the other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, once they overturned the death penalty, this whole thing is just weird. Because like during the resentencing trial, the judge allowed some of Gary's prior felonies to be included, like the convictions for sexual battery, robbery, and first degree murders of Roberts and Morris, which he had previously pled guilty. It's just so weird. And this is actually May 27th, 1999, the second jury came back again with its verdict. They actually only deliberated for an hour. They unanimously found Gary guilty and again suggested that he be sentenced to death in the electric chair. So he had 2 trials, both of which he was found guilty and sentenced to the death penalty.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, it was filed.
I'm anti-death penalty. So, like, my mind instantly is just like, man, this guy needed help. He doesn't need to be death penalty. But then, like, not to sound completely heartless, but it's like once you get to this point that this guy's at where he's killed this amount of people and they're extremely violent, extremely, like, what kind of rehabilitation is there? I mean, he's never going to be on the street again. We already know that. I'm not saying that. But I'm like, even living in a facility, is he going to have a meaningful life? And then, I mean, meaningful as far as like, is he going to even enjoy his life? Maybe. I mean, maybe you could get to that point, but I don't know. It's just, it's really like I said, this person can't help a lot of what occurred at this point, right? If along the way he said, hey, I've got these kind of issues, I need to go see someone, I need to take care of this, yes. But like at this point, there's no turning back. So it's like, do you know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't believe in the death penalty, but then I'm like, what do you do with this guy?
I don't know, because I go back and forth on the death penalty. I can't really make up my mind if I agree with it or if I disagree with it. I know if somebody had brutally killed somebody that I loved, I would want them dead. And I would be in full support of the death penalty. But like somebody for like Eileen Wuornos, I don't think she should have been executed. I think she's just been locked up for, you know, ever.
Right.
This guy.
But I mean, again, devil's advocate, she's got a lot of victims' families that would feel the same way you just said you'd feel, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's the whole problem with the death penalty is they got, you know, there may be there's somebody at one, you know, sure, one day who's like, oh, I don't believe it. I don't think it should, you know, be done. And then something happens to them personally. And it's like, kill the motherfucker. Just, you know, that type of thing. I don't know. I mean, this guy, I don't think his issues could ever be fixed. I think that rage is just a part of who he is. Right. And
right,
it's never going to go away.
I guess the question then isn't, because like I said, being on the streets not a possibility for this guy. But so the question's not death penalty versus being let go. It's can he have an actual enjoyable, meaningful life? I mean, he needs to be in a long-term care facility. But in prison, is this guy going to have a long-term, meaningful life? And I don't, like I said, I don't mean meaningful like he's out there changing the world. I mean meaningful as far as having general value to himself and enjoyment out of his daily life.
Why should he? He's in jail for killing 6 people.
Okay, so you're just looking from a like a completely punitive standpoint where it's like he deserves to like have no joy every day forever. So I'm looking at it like, and that's fine. Like I see how you get to that because this guy's done atrocious things. I'm looking at it like he couldn't help this. So I don't know that I necessarily think he needs every day to be completely devoid of joy.
Yeah, but you can say that about a lot of people who are locked up in prison.
You could, and I would. But then again, I don't want these people all out on the street. So it's like, basically, I'm having a fundamental dilemma because it's like, I don't know what you would do with someone like this. We clearly can't just make, I mean, we already spend some astronomical amount on the prisons we have, right? You can't just make just tons of mental health care facilities, right? And then put everyone there.
Well, just because he's in prison doesn't necessarily mean it's going to, you know, lead a horrible life. I mean, look at Ed Kemper. He's been in prison pretty much his whole life, and he seems to be doing very well.
That's true. You know? And that was my question is like, can he still leave? And I guess the answer from what you're saying right there is yes. Right. And if you look at like the Son of Sam, right? Like that guy's got websites, he's got friends.
That guy's thriving in prison.
Yes. I actually think they said he's made like millions of dollars as a prisoner. Like that guy has a more productive life than me.
He can't make money off his crimes.
Okay. So maybe I read that wrong. I thought he was making money.
He might be making money in a different way, but he's not legally he's not allowed to make money off of his crimes. Hmm. Nobody can, which I agree with.
Well, sure.
But you know, there's loopholes because Gacy was making a shit ton of money too.
Right. And just from his notoriety, anything he does, which has nothing to do with his crimes, 100% has everything to do with his crimes. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like if I go out there and I'm like the Son of Sam and now I'm a t-shirt seller.
Yeah.
I mean, people are going to buy those t-shirts because you're the Son of Sam, which has everything to do with your crimes, even though your t-shirts have nothing to do with your crimes, right?
Indirectly. So, you know, there's always those loopholes and those gray areas that, you know, because like I said, Gacy fucking made a ton of money selling his paintings and shit like that. So,
right,
that creepy clown, that's just weird.
Right. And like anyone who's done any artwork or you don't even have to be an artist to know this, right? Like just basic knowledge. There are many, many very extremely talented artists who don't make money, right? So Gacy's talent was not astronomical, right? Like,
no.
It was because he committed these crimes, right?
So this is notoriety, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, and people, you know, because these guys all have fans, you know, let's face it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, like, I wouldn't call myself a fan, but I'm very, very fascinated by serial killers. Like, you know, I'm not going to fangirl and be a groupie or anything like that, but a lot of these people do. And, you know, they can also put money into their accounts. I mean,
they get
fans to the
point where they get married because people fall in love with them.
Oh yeah, I know. It's crazy. I think Richard Ramirez had a lot of female followers, which is, he fucking raped people. So why the hell? We can get off on a whole other tangent on that one.
Ted Bundy had followers.
Ted Bundy had a lot of female followers.
He had the woman that, like, he said he was innocent and she believed him, right? So they were together. I don't remember if they got married or not.
They got married during trial.
Okay,
he used
right.
the system to get married to her.
And then eventually she figures out, wait, this guy might be guilty. It's like, okay, look.
They had a kid together.
After they had a kid together, right? Like, so, like, this is my point. We got, like, this Gary guy's mom, right? Bad relationship after bad relationship. Look, there's a lot of people in the world. Even if Ted Bundy seems to be the nicest guy ever, and you kind of think maybe he didn't do it, just for your own well-being and health and etc., wouldn't you think you'd be like, you know what? I kind of think this guy didn't do it, but I'm going to choose to date someone who definitely didn't kill, like, what was it, like 100 women? 50 women, something
crazy,
right?
I think he admitted to like 36 or something like that.
But they think it might be more, right?
They think it might be
one of the most prolific, let's just say one of the most prolific serial killers of all time, right? Yeah. Like, let's just not take that risk, right?
Well, maybe that's part of the thrill.
I mean, I think it is, but that shows that she's got her own
issues, like mental issues.
Right,
yeah,
absolutely.
Lord have mercy. I couldn't.
Just a disclaimer out there. I'm not even like, I'm sorry if anyone's offended by this statement, but this is the stuff your family and friends aren't telling you that you need to know. If you are corresponding with people that you didn't know prior in prison with the intent of possibly forming an interpersonal relationship or couplage, etc., you need to go talk to a therapist. Just putting that out there.
Well, I have a confession. I actually do want to write a lot of these people, but
yes,
not
but
for
not
intimate relations.
Them. You're not trying to date them. It's for your own information and knowledge because it's like what you do.
I'm straight up scared to do it, though. I'm just going to put that out there.
Well, and that fear's healthy. But these people who are like, ooh, I would date Ted Bundy. It's like, you need to talk to someone now because your parents and friends and sisters and brothers, they're not steering you right.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, and maybe they have the same kind of characteristic traits that these serial killers do. Maybe there's some kind of psychopathy behind them, too. And they just
they
like attracts like.
Right. They relate to not the violent killings, hopefully, but they relate to some of the other aspects. But it's like you can't ignore the violent killings.
No, no, but, you can't.
Like I said, this scary insane. Guy, like I don't think he could help how he got to here. Same with Eileen Wuornos. And mm-hmm. she's no longer with us, etc. But like, that doesn't mean I want to be their best friends and try to get him out of prison so we can hang out. Because this dude would kill me.
Probably, yeah. But sadly, you don't have to worry about that because Gary Ray Bowles was executed by lethal injection on August 22nd, 2019 at Florida State Prison. He did leave. And I don't, you know, his final thoughts are actually kind of interesting. He said, I'm sorry for all the pain and suffering I've caused. I hope my death eases your pain. I want to tell my mother that I'm also sorry for my actions. Having to deal with your son being called a monster is terrible. I'm so very sorry. I never wanted this to be my life. You don't wake up one day and decide to become a serial killer.
Yeah, and I believe in 100% all that. And like some of these personality disorders have lack of empathy. But like I said, everything's at a certain point. Like I said, there are issues where like maybe I'm not as empathetic as I should be.
Mm-hmm.
But they just have an extreme amount of it. But that doesn't mean that this person doesn't have any, right? Like
That's true.
Especially like I feel he's leaning towards the borderline side. Most borderlines actually tear themselves up because they are so riddled with the guilt of the outbursts and things they have. And they're not even out there killing people, right? They're just yelling at like their loved ones, right? It was like, so I believe him, and it's actually a really sad statement, but it's good that he is thinking about his victims, right? Like their families.
Absolutely. The only audio clip I've got is about 3 minutes long, and it's this interview he did with this one chick, and she's annoying, but the way they cut it, it's just too much of a pain in the ass for me to cut her out. So we're just going to listen to the whole thing, and just to kind of give you a glimpse into him so you can see and hear Mr. Bowles. Okay, so this is a clip of somebody interviewing him when he was, this is pretty close to him being executed.
Tell me how you killed him.
It's like a glass vase.
Yes.
And I bit off, cracked him across the skull with that. And he fell across a big glass table, and I just went to beating him.
How many minutes afterwards, after you killed him, did you realize what you'd done? I mean, the house of the master, you got a dead guy right
there. Oh, it was probably a couple minutes after I was done, my life's completely over with now. I just knew at that time that my life was over with.
The way I analyze these people that kill, the way I get to the truth, is I travel into their minds and their souls in a very human way.
We kind of got into an argument, got into a fight. I mean, a fist fight. And he had a shotgun that he kept by the door. And I grabbed that gun he had by the door and shot him with the shotgun.
Mm. I think the reason why killers are drawn to me is the reason why regular people are drawn to me. I'm a very good listener.
Typical or not.
This lady tooting herself up.
This is not the life I planned. I just kind of went insane for a temporary period there, you know? It's like all the murders were different, like I said. The last guy I killed, I smashed his head in with a stone.
So the part where he's talking, you know, he went temporarily insane.
Yeah.
That to me is like, I just think that's his raging out period.
Yeah, I was going to say 100% what you just said, that he just doesn't know how to describe when he can't control his emotions, right? Emotional dysregulation is heavy in borderline, especially, and antisocial to an extent where it's like he can't control himself. He doesn't know how to say that, so he just says, I went temporarily insane. Because lack of control is scary, and it feels like you're insane. I mean, it's completely reasonable way to
look at it.
What do you think you're going to say for your final words?
Well, for my final words, I'd probably say that I'm sorry to all the families of the people I killed, and I hope by me being executed that they can find peace. And I hope I get to see my mom beforehand, you know.
If you had to pick somebody
to be there at the end?
Yeah.
I'd like for you to be there.
I will be, for sure.
He's like, you're a good-looking lady. I wouldn't mind being by my side.
Exactly. I don't. well, they actually, I don't like her because I don't like the way they set it up, because it's more, it's like, it's all about her as opposed to.
It seems like a job interview.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, so I'm willing to go to the prisons and be out in the field and blah, 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 blah. And can I just throw this out there that anyone interested in this sort of journalism is willing to go to the prisons. And in fact, that would be something that they would be hoping would happen. Like, that's not like you're doing something special.
Yeah. It's
like,
she's not heroic.
Like, please let me go talk to Charlie Manson, although he's no longer with us.
I want to go to prisons and interview these people, but I don't know.
But would you be like, I'm willing to do this? And it's like, no, because like,
well, I wouldn't make a documentary out of it and be like, to say that stuff. I would just, you know, want to get him or her on camera talking to me. Yeah,
this feels a lot like she's trying to go to a different broadcasting network. And yeah, this is her clip she made for the new network.
But to the parts where Gary actually was allowed to be on camera and talk.
Yeah.
I mean, he recounts it very matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't feel like there's a lot of emotion behind it, but you know,
no. Well, and even when like, his when he talks about the last statement where he's giving, you know, support to the families and saying he wants to see his mom, doesn't seem real emotional.
Yeah. You know, and I don't know, maybe he's just one of those guys that's very monotone, like my brother's. He's a very passionate person, but if you heard him talk, you wouldn't think so.
Right.
He's very flat.
Right. You know? Well, and Gary also did say that at that time of whichever killing that happened to be, mm-hmm. knew his life was over at that point, right? So this guy's had a long time to process that he's no longer part of society, right? He knew that this was all coming. So it's like, I think he's very much processed that it's over. So,
I mean, it's a fascinating case of nature versus nurture, I think, because if he had had good stepdads, maybe this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. I mean, environment times biological interaction is what leads to this type of thing, right? Like, it's mm-hmm. not one or the other. It is the nature and nurture combination. And if he had healthy support, there is a chance that none of this would have occurred. I'm not saying he would have been like perfect, but like it would have been normal issues that we all kind of suffer with from time to time. Not this completely antisocial, murderous, you know, he doesn't care at all at this point about what society deems as normal or right or legal, right? So
I'm not sure it's a not care thing so much as just something that didn't cross his mind.
Yeah. Well, and you said too, like, it's life factors matter too, right? And
yeah,
he's also clearly just looking for a place to live over and over and over again as well, right? But however, if he didn't kill these people, his living environment might have stayed a little bit more stable.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, I would think so. Oh, such a shame. Such a shame.
All right, guys, thank you for joining us for our Gary Ray Bowles episode. As always, you can catch Mandy on Pandora, and I'm Ben.
Oh, gosh, he always has to say something weird. But to the real as always statement, if you want to get in touch with us, our email is throughtheabysspodcast@gmail.com. We are also on Twitter, Snapchat, and Instagram at abysspodcast1.
Ooh, and I want to throw out there too that for some reason we're like blowing up with one episode on something called Podbean. So if you have Podbean, listen to us.
Thanks, Podbean.
Well, Ben, we got another episode under our belts. Thanks so much for tuning in to Through the Abyss podcast. And until next time, keep it weird.
Spooky stuff.